Some people say that, well, this was a common custom at that time. Other people are less certain and suggest that maybe Naomi was really not even being godly in what she was suggesting here, because this seems so very forward for a woman to do. And what are we to make of it?
How do you respond when God's providence becomes evident in your life? Does the Bible give guidance in that regard? You'll see how it does indeed on this edition of the Truth Pulpit. Hi, I'm Bill Wright, and Pastor Don Green is continuing our series, God of the Details, a study in Ruth. Today, Don begins a message titled, Responding to Favorable Providence. And Don, how about a little preview of what's ahead of us?
One of my favorite doctrines in all of the Bible is the doctrine of divine providence, that God is at work accomplishing His plans and purposes in everything that happens. It would be easy to misunderstand the implications of that. Providence does not mean that you are a passive player on a stage. Scripture gives you responsibility to live out your faith, and God directs His providence in part through the way that you live your life. We're going to give you some practical application of that throughout today's broadcast.
Have your Bible handy as we join Pastor Don Green now.
You know the story, we've looked at it. Ruth found her way, so happened to find her way to the field of Boaz, who was a relative of Naomi's. Boaz treated her kindly, and now there's a little bit of energy going forward, and you can see the providence playing out. And on an earthly level, you get a picture in that second chapter that there may be some sparks of romance going on as well. And as you come to the end of chapter 2, this is all just by way of review. In chapter 2, verse 20, for example, Naomi explains to Ruth who Boaz is. It'd be like, you say, well, I just happened to meet a man today and his name was Bill Gates. And, you don't know who Bill Gates is. And she says, Bill Gates, let me tell you who you just met. That's what's going on in verse 20. She said, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. She says, God's kindness is on display with the man that you just met. And she goes on to say in verse 20, this man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives. He's one of our redeemers. He is in a position to be under obligation under the law of God to help us, she explains. And Ruth says to her in verse 21, he said to me, stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, it's good that you go out with his maids. And in verse 23, she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Now, while this is unfolding, Naomi has expressed in the past, in chapter 1, verse 9, she expressed concern about Ruth's future. She wanted Ruth to have a husband. At the time when she prayed, she assumed that Ruth would go back to and find a Moabite husband. Ruth kind of distorted those plans when she followed after her. But Naomi has had this sort of paternal care for her daughter-in-law, this concern that her daughter-in-law would be provided for. And so when Boaz comes into the picture, she's excited about that. And yet she feels the need to kind of stir the pot to help Providence along, you might say. And as Ruth chapter 2 closes, Ruth is now in the fields and she's living with Naomi and life is kind of progressing day by day. And yet there's this tension, there is this element that's been injected into the storyline that shows that there's more to come. Here in chapter 3, we come to the turning point of the story. And what has been latent in the relationship between Boaz and Ruth now becomes explicit. What we see in the early stirrings of Providence now comes into full display. And what Naomi did as a woman of faith, Naomi saw a favorable providence in what had happened. Boaz was eligible. Boaz was a kinsman redeemer. Ruth was available and needed a husband. And Boaz had shown favor to Ruth. It doesn't take too much of a woman's intuition to put two and two together and say there may be something more to be done here. And so she, as it were, speaking figuratively, not literally, what we see in the early part of Ruth 3 is she kind of puts her hand in the small of Ruth's back and pushes her out the door toward Boaz. And we see the unfolding of this as she seeks to advance that relationship to fulfill her concern that Ruth would have a husband to care for her after Naomi herself was gone. So look at verses 1 and 2 here. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maid you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight." Naomi is expressing once again the fact that she feels personally responsible for Ruth's well-being. She had expressed this in the past. Look at chapter 1, verse 9. You can see the heart of Naomi on display over time. She says in verse 9, to Ruth and to her other daughter-in-law at the time, says, "May the Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband." And so this idea of rest or security in marriage was on Naomi's mind. She uses a similar word in chapter 3, verse 1, when she says, "Shall I not seek security for you?" Naomi was the Jew. She was the native in this land. Her daughter-in-law was the foreigner. And so Naomi says, "I've got to help you here. Is it not right for me to seek security for you?" And for a widow in that society, security would come in the form of marriage, not through finding an independent existence. Marriage would be the source of security for her. And Naomi, having grown up in Bethlehem, being familiar with the traditions and the routine of harvest time, she knew what was going to happen because it was the end of the barley and wheat harvest. And so in verse 2, she says, "Behold, Boaz is going to be winnowing barley at the threshing floor tonight." And so she concocts this plan. And she tells Ruth, "Make yourself attractive and go to him tonight." Look at verses 3 and 4. She says, "Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor. But don't make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down, and then he will tell you what you shall do." What on earth is Naomi doing here? She's telling Ruth, "Ruth, get yourself dolled up here. Go and kind of watch in the shadows and see what Boaz is doing and where he goes to lie down. And then I want you to go in later and make yourself at his feet, uncover his feet, and then see what happens after that." Now, to us, there's a lot of things, and I emphasize to us here in our 21st century mindset, there is quite a bit in that little scenario that sounds a little bit suspicious. If you think about it and think through what she's saying. First of all, she's telling her daughter-in-law to make herself especially attractive. She tells her to watch in secret to see where Boaz goes and where he lies down. And then she says, "Uncover his feet and then see what happens in the cover of night." And so she's telling Ruth to go and to have this, make this very forward advance on Boaz, and then see what happens. What are we to make of this? Some people say that, well, this was a common custom at that time, and that this was a way that Naomi was just following the custom of the time. Other people are less certain and suggest that maybe Naomi was really not even being godly in what she was suggesting here, because this seems so very forward for a woman to do. And what are we to make of it? People are, you know, commentators you read, they have different takes on it. Well, first of all, when it comes to saying this particular aspect of going there and uncovering his feet was a custom, that's an easy explanation. But one of the best commentators on Ruth, Leon Morris, says this, and I quote, he's skeptical that that's the answer to this. He says, "We have very little knowledge of the customs prevalent in Israel in antiquity. And the arrangements for marriage here outlined are not elsewhere attested. But then we have no other example of a situation quite like this. What was to be done where two widows were left to their own devices?" End quote. What he's saying is he says, you know, I'm not convinced that this is an established custom in ancient Israel that she's following here. He says, first of all, no place else talks about this so-called custom. And so it's kind of on shaky ground to say that it's something established that everyone would know about. And also he's saying, consider the situation here. You have a widow in Naomi and her daughter-in-law who is also a widow. How often does that happen, where a mother-in-law is responsible for the care of a widowed daughter-in-law? He's saying, you know, there aren't customs to cover this, because this is a pretty extraordinary situation that we're dealing with. And so what are we to make of it? One other writer suggests that, when I'm not going to quote him here, but suggests that Naomi had stepped over the line here. This is far too forward for her to be acting, and questions her integrity, and that maybe Boaz, you know, she's just trying to force things too much. And to send an unmarried widow into the grain field like that is to the threshing floor is too much, and she shouldn't have done that. I'm not convinced that that's the right explanation either. And I would say this, and how are we to understand this and what Ruth has done? Let's start here. I think the safest route for us to assess what Naomi did here is to assume the best. And to assume that Naomi and Ruth and Boaz are all acting righteously within the context of their culture some 3,000 years ago. Let's just assume that what sounds to us in the 21st century as something very flirtatious and something very forward and prone to unrighteousness even, that perhaps 3,000 years ago they were seeing it differently, and that they did not see impropriety in it, that somehow there was something proper about this. After all, Boaz is a godly man. And Boaz did not turn Ruth away when she showed up at his feet, and rather he commends her for her virtue. And so I always think that the safest route, unless Scripture gives us clear indications to the contrary, is that we should assume that biblical characters who are not criticized directly in the text, we should assume that the men of faith in the Bible, the men and women of the faith in the Bible, are acting righteously until we have reason in the text to say that they're not. Let's not sit in judgment of those that God has seen fit to honor with how their lives turned out. And so we're going to understand this text going forward now that Ruth righteously made her interest in Boaz known to him in this circumstance, even if in our culture a nighttime encounter under the cover of darkness might seem immodest. We're just going to assume that there's something about this that is different in their context than would be in ours, and we'll go on the assumption that these three that God chose to honor and make them ancestors of Christ, Naomi not in a blood sense, that somehow they were acting righteously. And if it were scandalous, Boaz, a man of character, would not have received it well. And so we rely on the way that Boaz interpreted it to guide our understanding of how we should understand it. Well, whatever the case, Ruth follows her mother-in-law's advice. Look at verse 5 with me. She said to her, meaning Ruth said to Naomi, "All that you say, I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. You have to love the submissive, deferential spirit that Ruth shows to her mother-in-law here, I believe. That, Naomi gives her a plan and sends Ruth out with this plan, but Ruth is really in a vulnerable position. She's going out at night. There's no guarantee about how Boaz is going to respond. It's possible that, that it could be misinterpreted. And yet Ruth says to Naomi, "I'll do what you say." Her trust and her really, to use the word, obedience to her mother-in-law is exemplary. Her character is such that she is willing to follow the leadership of one who is in authority over her. And she follows and she goes down, and verse 6 is a bit of a summary statement saying that Ruth did what Naomi asked. And then in beginning in verse 7, you see the details of how it played out and what follows. And it gives us the details of what happens. And so now here in verse 7, you kind of see it from Ruth's perspective. And you see what's going on as this plays out, this seemingly odd advice that Naomi gave her. We see how it plays out in real time. And what we see, living on the cutting edge of providence, you see providence playing out in detail. And you realize that something significant is going on, even while you're not sure exactly how it's going to turn out. I love those times. Like I say, I think they're comparatively rare when really, really major things are happening in really, really obvious ways. And you know that God's hand is in it. That's not the norm, but in the sense that it's the daily nature of life necessarily. But when it happens, it's very special. And this is what Ruth was living out as she entered into Boaz's world there in verse 7. Look at it with me, please. Boaz is in a good mood. Verse 7. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Now, while Boaz here has drunk and his heart was merry, we should not think of him as intoxicated here. He is merry for a couple of reasons. One, he's just had a good meal, and so he has that feeling of satisfaction from having eaten after a long day's work. And also, remember the overall context. He's now sitting on top of a good harvest when just in the very recent past there had been a famine in the land. And that's how the whole book opened. The book opens in famine. But now here Boaz is as a landowner. He's got a harvest. He's eaten a good meal. He feels really good because the work is done, and now he's able to enjoy the fruit of his labor going forward. So of course his heart is happy. Your heart is happy after a good payday and you've had a good meal. Well, we should think about it in those terms. And this is what he's doing. And so he goes in and he lies down at the end of the heap of the grain. Now, what they tell us is that the landowners and those who were responsible for the harvest, they would lay next to their grain in order to protect it from thieves at night. So they would sleep on the, so to speak, barn floor next to the harvest until it could be processed and taken away so that no one would steal it. So he's laying down, protecting the fruit of months of labor through the sowing and the harvest that followed. And so he's happy and he lays down and he goes to sleep thinking that he is alone. And then Ruth kind of paces up and quietly lays down. He's obviously asleep by the time that she gets there because she uncovers his feet. If he had been awake, he would have noticed this, but he was not awake. And so Ruth goes and uncovers his feet. There are some who suggest that feet is a euphemism, a figure of speech that she uncovered more than just his feet, but I don't think that's justified, and that's all we'll say about it. We'll take it as the English text naturally reads and not think that she uncovered more and was indecent in what she did. I think that's unthinkable in the context of this pure book in Scripture. So she goes and she lays down at his feet and pulls off whatever his cloak or whatever was covering and uncovers his feet. And now she waits. Verse 8, she's laying there. It's probably unlikely that Ruth herself went to sleep. She needed to be awake for when the inevitable happened. And so she's just laying there waiting patiently at Boaz's feet for things to happen. And look what takes place in verse 8. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. Now, let's just say something about this right now. You know, when you live in the city like we do here or in the suburbs, nighttime is not completely dark. You know, we're used to those of us that live in the suburbs, maybe some of you out in the country, you have greater realms of darkness. But in this time of world history, darkness would have been really, really dark. And there are times where, you know, the darkness is so thick that you can barely see your hand in front of your face. Well, we should assume that kind of darkness here, because Boaz, when he sits up, he doesn't know who's just 3 feet down at his feet. He obviously cannot see her. He cannot recognize her. He just knows that someone is there. And he says, "Who are you?" And he recognizes the voice that responds, because he's spoken to her in the past. She answered, "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." Now, first of all, Ruth identifies herself. And yet, in what she says, it may seem a little bit obscure in the first reading in English. What she's saying, for she is asking him to marry her. She is being that direct, and you can tell by the way that Boaz responds to it. First of all, to spread your covering over your maid, she's asking more than to be warm in the night because she's cold and she needs a blanket over her. That's not what she's saying. She's saying, spread your covering. In other words, spread your protection over me. And she gives the reason, for you are a close relative. And what she's saying is, you're a kinsman redeemer. You have a biblical responsibility here, a biblical opportunity that we've talked about in prior messages on Ruth 2. She's saying, Boaz, I would like you to marry me, by what she says to him. He is a kinsman redeemer. He is closely related enough to act and to help and to even marry her. What we saw in times past was that the kinsman redeemer, in passages from Leviticus and Deuteronomy, you can go back to the prior messages, was someone who could rescue a relative from trouble when the relative could not save himself, whether that involved purchasing land that he had sold under duress, redeeming him from slavery, or even marriage if he was related and his brother's wife was left a widow. The kinsman redeemer defended the rights of the person, the rights of a family member, and helped him in time of trouble. And so what Ruth is saying when she says you're a close relative, you're a redeemer, what she's saying is it's a very vulnerable moment. It's a very sweet moment where she is appealing to him based on their relationship, based on his position in the family. And she's saying, spread your covering over me. Protect me. Help me. Now, why would she do it at night? Well, you know, when else is she going to have a private conversation with him, with all of the other workers around where people are going to do it? So they needed to have this talk in private.
That's Don Green, founding pastor of Truth Community Church in Cincinnati, Ohio, with part one of a message titled, Responding to Favorable Providence. Don will have part two next time, and he'll provide some important practical applications from Ruth and Naomi's experiences. So stay with us as we continue our series, God of the Details, a study in Ruth, here on the Truth Pulpit. But right now, Don's back here in studio with some closing words.
I know that many of you have found us for the first time on Christian radio, and that's wonderful. But I also realize that sometimes your schedules don't let you work around the broadcast schedule. We have made it possible for you to be able to still get the Truth Pulpit on a regular basis. We have a broadcast of each radio broadcast that you can find, and you can have it automatically delivered to your favorite listening device. If you go to our website, you can find a link to the podcast, sign up for it, and be sure to catch every episode. Here's Bill to help you find it.
Just visit thetruthpulpit.com, where you can also learn more about this ministry. I'm Bill Wright, and we'll see you next time for more from the Truth Pulpit.